Detroit Beard Collective is a proud sponsor of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Guys, tired of trying to make that burly beard of yours look and smell good? Then check this out. Straight out of the Motor City, where they know a thing or two about being tough, comes Detroit Beard Collective, specializing in making that facial hair look good with products like beard butter, beard oils and soaps, specialty combs, and so much more. Come check out the line today at DetroitBeardCollective.com. DBC takes pride in using Detroit and Michigan-based companies and ingredients in all aspects of their product development and manufacturing as they continue to build Detroit's premier grooming company. Even burly dudes like to look and smell good, and DBC will make that happen. Do yourself and your badass beard a favor and log on to DetroitBeardCollective.com and check out all the amazing products they offer. And when you're ready to check out, use promo code SJPDBC to receive 10% off. Detroit Beard Collective, cleaning this world up one beard at a time.
Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio as we are wired up and ready to go for a brand new show here in the studios of Creaking Door. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you, ready to have a good time tonight. Brad, we've got coming up a little bit later a first-time guest inside the Creaking Door.
That's right, Miss Nikki Folsom.
Yes. Who
I've had the privilege of knowing for a couple of years now, off and on. We've got a lot of mutual friends and got to hang out with her a little bit in England this past summer when I went over for Sage Paracon. And just a fascinating lady. I can't wait to hear what she has to say. She's got a great book out, The Haunted Harlequin, and it could easily be one of the most haunted places in the U.S.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to kind of just, we're just going to scratch the surface with it. We're going to tease.
We'll ease into it a little bit. So
we'll have some fun with that coming up a little bit later in the show today. But here we are. We've crossed that threshold. We've made it out of the month of October alive.
And now we're heading into the holiday season.
Yeah, now the holidays. So does it really slow down?
It does not.
Even though we want it to, it does not. But here we are into November, getting close to Thanksgiving. In the States anyway. I know our neighbors to the north already celebrated Thanksgiving in October, but we're getting ready for the drumsticks and mashed potatoes not too far down the road, but it's never a bad time for good ghost stories.
That's true.
Let's keep it rolling as we get ready for what we like to call paranews. At this time, we like to dig up some news stories that we find interesting that kind of deal with the strange and the paranormal.
And how about starting things off with a little bit of ghost porn?
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know you're a fan of the genre.
Who said?
Tim?
Are you looking at my credit card statement again?
Well, let's get right into
this.
Ghost hunter Stephen Briggs has made many shocking revelations. He claims he's had more than 100 supernatural encounters, including seeing two spirits having sex in a museum toilets.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did he track that down?
This guy is talented.
What kind of machinery does he have for that?
I tell you what, this guy needs his own show. 38-year-old Stephen Briggs even says he's been assaulted by a ghost and has seen the apparition of Victorian policemen patrolling his local streets. Describing one of his experiences, he says, "There was another one where I saw two people having a sexual encounter in a toilet."
Was that an English accent?
Yeah, it was a really piss-poor attempt at one.
You didn't try that when you were over at Sage, did you?
I really did.
They would have chased
you
right out.
Not sober. I did not. So two people having a sexual encounter in a toilet at a museum in East Kirby. I went to open the door to tell them to stop. Why? And then they just vanished. Okay, I headed out to the airfield, but there was no one there. My family had been waiting outside the toilet, and they say they hadn't seen anyone go in or out. Stephen says he has faced more than 100 supernatural encounters up till now. Stephen from Horncastle Links was a toddler when he first saw a ghost. I've had so many, I don't know where to start. Some are the most bizarre and amusing, but ghosts aren't always scary. The first one I can remember was when I sat in me mum's knee waiting for me dad. Me mum's knee waiting for me dad. There was a gentleman in a coat, and he just disappeared. Interesting. Stephen once is often criticized nowadays by social media users on the internet and receives hate mail.
I see the picture. But it looks like he wears a big black hat, so that's
he
good.
Does. He does. You got to be safe.
Yes.
So, but he says, I have no reason to make it up. I think people are just jealous that I am the center of attention.
Yes.
How many years have we been investigating paranormal claims, Tim?
Well over 20 now.
Boy, and I don't know, you know, 100 and the toilet sex.
Where's the contract? Sign this guy up.
This guy, we need him.
Yes,
we need
do.
Him. He needs to be on television.
All right, here we go. My first story of the night. You know, young 20s, that should be a time where if you're in college, you're enjoying the college days and just going out and having fun with your friends. But not the case for this 23-year-old, Bryn Larson from Arizona, who battles Satan and performs dramatic exorcisms to banish demons between lectures at her university.
That is one busy person.
It really is. Bryn is part of a glamorous trio along with Savannah, 26, and Tess Schirkenbach, 23, who call themselves the All-American Exorcists after renaming themselves from the Teenage Exorcists.
I think I've heard of them before.
After they got old enough, they had kind of like, when are the Backstreet Boys going to become the Backstreet Men?
Rites of passage, correct.
Yeah, so you have to. Now, the aspiring doctor has performed apparently 2,000 exorcisms since she started at the tender age of 13, after being trained by her father, Reverend Bob Larson. Armed with a Bible, cross, holy water, and a few choice words, the young woman says she has cast out demons of voodoo and witchcraft and many others in 23 different countries at just the age of 23. Bryn admitted that the act of removing a demon can become very physical at times. Speaking to the interviewer, she said, we had to stop exorcisms because we haven't had enough people to hold them down. We're looking for a bigger team. It becomes too violent. We've had to regroup. We don't want anybody getting hurt. She said, Dad has had his ribs cracked before. I've taken a punch or two, but nothing too serious for me. And she says, Russian demons seem to be the most violent. Something's a little bit darker over there. Obviously, they're interfering with our elections, it seems.
Yeah.
You know? She says, at one time on a Russian exorcism, she says it took 12 people to hold one person down. Bryn said that the exorcisms are not about levitating and head spinning around, as many people believe, because of Hollywood. She says it's just simply about seeing the evil manifest in someone who is possessed. So she's out there doing this, and she's been doing it since she was 13, and she says... the moment proved pivotal for Bryn when she first witnessed her first demon and her first exorcism with her father. She says, I now know it's my life's work, but she still is going to school to become a doctor at the same time. So,
you know, this is scary.
It really is.
If it's real, it's terrifying for one thing. If it's BS, it's scary because of what she is putting out there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this is the same trio that I saw years ago on an evening news program. I believe it was one of these Nightline or one of these that they had them on and they interviewed them. And it just seemed so wrong that these three teenage kids they were bringing in to perform exorcisms.
Right. And she says she was taught by her father. Nowhere in this article that I found did it say how the other two kids were taught and if the father is with them all the time. So, again, yeah, it's just really... And then to put this type of information out there and then to let kids get a hold of it, that's what worries me about it. So
Yeah. It sets a dangerous precedence, I think.
Sure does.
So, well, these kids are spending their spring break on exorcisms, you might want to take yours at the Ramada Sasquatch Inn or Bed and Breakfast. Or
sign me up.
It sounds like fun, but hey.
Can I find it on Trivago?
You may indeed. Okay. A well-known Bigfoot researcher and his investment company are on track to build a $25 million multi-story hotel complex that will also hold the world's largest Bigfoot museum.
Oh, my.
Yes. Tom Biscardi, the president and chief executive officer of Bigfoot Project Investments, Inc. I believe this is the same outfit that was trying to fund or raise $1 million for Bigfoot research earlier in the year.
Okay.
They had some things going on. But anyway, he's partnered up with Bill and Carol Stewart, who own the Dancing Bears Inn in the center of East Glacier, Montana. That facility will be razed to the ground to make room for the 100-plus room Bigfoot Hotel.
I like this.
I do, too.
There should be a Loch Ness one. I want to see someone do that.
This is fun. Mm-hmm. This is fun. But Bigfoot Project Investments Chief Financial Officer Sarah Reynolds said the company is in the process of obtaining a building permit from the Blackfeet tribe. Because this is on tribal land, no other formal planning approval is needed.
Wow.
So that should fast-track things.
Yes.
Construction's expected to begin early next year. Biscardi has produced several Bigfoot films and videos that revolve around his extensive search for the creature known as Bigfoot. He also is the creator and host of the Bigfoot Live Show, which is a live podcast covering new Bigfoot sightings, encounters, news, and expedition updates. It seems to me, Tom Biscardi, I think he's been behind several of these big Sasquatch hoaxes.
Yeah, the name sounds very familiar. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to jump on that computer thing.
That interweb and see what you can find. I did not have time to do that, but I believe he was behind one of the big ones where he had a suit encased in ice and they were going to announce it.
Right.
And yeah, I believe he was one of the names in there. We've got to look that up later, but it seems to me his name's usually associated with controversy.
Well, perhaps they can team up with this guy. My final story is also about the big hairy man himself too, Sasquatch. A Sasquatch researcher in Canada has filed a civil suit against the province of British Columbia, claiming that the government has failed in their duty to protect Bigfoot. It's about time we turn
Damn
the tables. Cryptozoologist Todd Standing charges the British Columbian Ministry of Environment as well as its Department of Fish and Wildlife for have been shirking their Sasquatch responsibilities.
Shirking. Sasquatch?
Yes. I wonder if that's the official
word
they use.
Right out there in public.
He shouldn't do that in public. Specifically, he contends that the BC government is guilty of, quote, dereliction of duty pertaining to the interests of indigenous wildlife species. As one can surmise, that species is Sasquatch, and Standing believes that should the lawsuit go to trial, he will prove the existence of the legendary creature once and for all. To pull off this seemingly insurmountable feat, the seasoned investigator intends to present the court with the photos, the video of the creature, physical evidence such as scat and hair, and an array of witness testimonies ranging from academia to eyewitnesses. One rather intriguing aspect of Standing's filing is that he is petitioning the court to provide him with a government-approved biologist to join him on not one, not two, but a three-month-long Sasquatch expedition in the region. He says, this is our one chance to prove it. I'm taking it to court. Science hasn't been able to prove it. I'm going to prove it through the law.
Well, dang those hosers for shirking the squatch. That's all I have to say. You know, this is kind of ironic because we've been following this story in New Mexico here in the States on Sasquatch funding being cut and an actual lawsuit against being able to use government funds for searching for mythological creatures, and they include Sasquatch in that.
Yep, that's why I found this one interesting, because now
it's the opposite side of it.
Turning the tables. Here we go. Go get them.
Shirking the squad.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I actually need a Liberty beer. How about you? I'm ready for one.
Oh, delicious.
All right.
Little IPA, Eagle IPA.
You got it. We're going to go.
Whistle.
We're going to go enjoy one of our sponsors while we take our first break. When we come back, we're going to have our guest come on inside the creaking door. She is author Nikki Folsom. Her first visit inside the creaking door is up next. Powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Nestled inside historic Old Village in Plymouth, Michigan, sits a beer lover's destination, Liberty Street Brewing Company. Since 2008, Liberty Street Brewing Company has been crafting delicious beer the right way, brewed in small amounts to ensure quality and maintain freshness. The moment you walk in, your experience is their number one concern. Caring staff, updated and changing list of delicious beer, and a short list of regular food are all waiting for you. Once you walk in, you won't want to leave. Or grab a growler of your favorite Liberty Street Brewing Company beer and head home to enjoy the latest episode of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Liberty Brewing Company in Plymouth, Michigan, giving you the freedom to choose a better beer. Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you. And Brad, we've been looking forward to sitting down for the first time with this guest inside the Creaking Door, because what small town is not complete without a creepy, haunted theater?
Well, right.
Exactly. We've got our own here.
We have ours. That's, I guess, what we compare it to. I was there today, too. I've got to tell you about that later.
Excellent.
A little something for off air. But, yeah, this is not just in a small town, but in San Antonio and in a fort, an old historic fort, military fort, in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And, wow, I mean, this from the stories that come out of this place and the history on this place, it could well be the most haunted theater in the United States.
And we are about to find out, because for the very first time, welcoming inside the Creaking Door, the author of The Haunted Harlequin, Ghostly Experiences Behind the Scenes. Please welcome Nikki Folsom. Nikki, welcome inside the Creaking Door, and thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So all the way from Texas, and we're gonna talk where everything's a little bit bigger in Texas, so we expect the ghost stories to be a little bit bigger tonight, all right?
Okay.
Wonderful. So, Nikki, we know you've made the trek north here before. You've been with us at MI Paracon, and you've shared some of your stories with people who have stopped by your vendor booth here before. But we want to share it with our listeners now of Creaking Door and this wonderful book, The Haunted Harlequin. First, let's hear about you and your journey into the paranormal. Let's find out who Nikki Folsom is first, if you could share that.
I sure can. So you know, my first experience in the paranormal was when I was little. I was 5 or 6 years old. So, you know, I had a good 5 years run without anything I had to worry about. And then I woke up one night and saw a soldier outside my bedroom door. And it doesn't sound like it would be interesting, but I actually grew up 20 minutes from Gettysburg in a little town called Chambersburg. And now that I think, you know, at that time, I'm not putting the two and two together. All I knew was I saw a soldier walk past the door, and he had a knife on the end of his rifle. And I didn't know what that was. Well, now it's a bayonet, but back then I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting. That's where it all started. And then as I got older, I found myself, and I guess I was just an odd kid growing up, because I found myself in the basement a lot. There was this room that was like the center of, when you come down the stairs from the upstairs in the house, there's this center room that's kind of like the hub, and there's doors, 4 doors in each direction that went to the laundry room and storage rooms and the finished off living room and another storage area. And I used to turn off the lights and sit at the bottom of the stairs, and I'd watch the stairs with the sliver of light at the top, because you could see shadows moving around. And I never felt afraid. It felt like a bus station almost. And I just felt, you know, like I was part of the people hanging out in there. And it never scared me until one day, this large shadow was standing on the stairs, and it started coming down the stairs towards me.
Oh, wow.
And if you've ever had a feeling in your stomach where this is not good, and the air starts to thicken, you know exactly what I'm talking about, I'm sure. That's what was happening. And it was getting closer and closer and closer to me, that the intensity was just building. And then all of a sudden, my mom threw open the door, turned on the light, said, "Time for dinner," and it went away.
So I find that really interesting. interesting because obviously, like you said, Nikki, you kind of thought of it as a bus station. There just always seemed to be that activity. One night you woke up, there was, for the very first time, there was a soldier there. For one moment, you experienced something that made you feel uncomfortable. So it's almost like, I mean, did you ever feel, looking back on it now, that maybe there was some type of portal there or some type of opening that allowed them to come and go?
Yeah, looking back now, I'm thinking, oh my God, why didn't I do 1,000 things that I know I could do
right now?
But as a kid, you know, I had no idea. There were no ghost shows. There were, you know, I was reading Hans Holzer books at that point because I was like, what is this? because that's really all there was, all that I knew to look for. And what I was doing, and this is actually kind of funny, I would sit. My dad would be mowing the grass outside, and I would sit downstairs with, you know, I'm going to age myself, but those, you know, portable recorders that you like record the song from the radio because there was no iTunes.
We were there. We did the same thing. We were right there with you.
Well, if he would mow the grass, the sound of that mower, that was kind of like my white noise. And I would ask questions in the recorder.
Oh, wow.
With that as the white noise. Why I thought to do that, I have no idea. But I'm like, oh. And I don't recall ever hearing anything. But I do remember starting that. And I, you know, this is when you start getting interested in Bloody Mary and the Ouija boards and all that stuff. And it's interesting because I played with the Ouija board a couple times, and the last time I played with it, it had lifted off my lap. My friend Christy and I were sitting there, kind of crisscross applesauce, and we were playing with it, and all of a sudden it lifted up, and I just hit it and ran out the back door, and Christy was right behind me, and I had not played with the Ouija board, and I had told myself I will never touch another one until we were in England, and Brad will know this one, but then I decided, what a great idea. Let's play with a Ouija board in Aleister Crowley's room.
Right.
If you're going to, you might as well go big, right?
With Robert Murch.
You know, yeah. Right, with Robert Murch, who was amazing. But yeah, go big or go home.
Right, with the number one Ouija historian in the world. So yeah, how could you not, though? I mean, just the
pure pressure, you had to.
Even with your experience, Nikki, just the temptation.
Yeah, right? It was, but I hadn't done anything like that. I played with it, and then I was addicted again. I'm like, oh my God, the coolest thing in the world. But here's what's interesting is, stuff followed me my whole life, and I thought, oh my God, my house was haunted in Pennsylvania, because as I grew up, my parents start telling me the things they saw, and I'm like, really, you're telling me now? You know, I thought it was crazy for a while, but it's followed me my whole life, and what kind of worries me, and I'm actually writing a second book, and I'm in the process of it right now, but what kind of worries me is my kids see things, and I'm thinking, oh my God, did I open a door that kind of caused them to get pulled into this? Because my oldest, the first time she saw something was when she was, I think she was six, when she saw two shadow figures in her room. And so, and my youngest sees things all the time. So I'm just, I feel guilty, like I caused something, but then when I think about it, I just don't know. Maybe it's just people have a thing that can be seen from the other side, and they say, hey, you, I know you can see me, pay attention.
Well, let me ask you this, Nikki. Do you consider yourself to be something of a sensitive then? It seems like you've had experiences throughout your entire life, starting when you were 5 years old.
Yeah, right? Well, so this is funny. In the book, you'll hear me write, I'm not a medium. I think I'm sensitive because I feel like I can sense feelings. I can pick up on things in a room. But then several of my friends are like, nope, keep pushing because you've got some more abilities. I'm like, But I think, unfortunately for me, I am. I'm in denial, apparently. But I do believe I...
Well, one thing,
I have some skills.
One thing that sticks out to me on that England trip this last year that I was on with you, we were doing that Jack the Ripper tour down in the alleys, and you kind of stopped, and you were getting some type of feeling there and had to stop and chat with the tour director on that for a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. When I was in, I guess my youngest was a year old or so. It's about 2001. I had a past life regression, and I remember it right now. I remember it like it's a memory that I lived through, and I still see what I looked like. I see what I was wearing. I could see the road I was running down, and for some reason, I thought, there's something to do with Jack the Ripper. Well, I was looking at probably 2009. It was years later. I was looking online, and I happened to be looking at the case studies for the Jack the Ripper case. And when one of the pictures of in the case study came out, I saw all of them, and I was like, oh, that's gross. But I didn't have a reaction. when one of them, Mary Kelly's, when I looked at hers, I physically got sick. I had to leave the computer and go get sick. And I have no idea why I reacted the way I did, but I was like, oh, there's something associated with it. But the reason I had to stop was because as I was describing to Russell the road, because he and I had talked over Facebook, MJ had gotten us in touch with each other so that we could talk about my experience. He said, I know exactly the road you're talking about. And that's where you were with me, Brad. That's the road. And I was like, oh my God. And it's a weird kind of deja vu, but it's almost you're conflicted trying to figure out how is this possible, you know, that I wasn't here, but I was here. So it was really odd. And I had a medium tell me, actually, I think it was Rebecca Smuck, who's at the Michigan Marathon as well.
Yeah, Rebecca's here every year.
Yeah, she told me, she said, I don't think you were a victim. I think you were supposed to be a victim. And your reaction was because that could have been you, and you knew it. And I was like, oh, my God. And she didn't even know the whole backstory. So that was the crazy part. She knew, you know, very little, and she started telling me, and I'm like, oh.
So, just kind of hearing what you're explaining, Nikki, from what you've seen as a kid and what you've experienced and how you can walk into a room and experience and feel emotions and stuff, it almost sounds like you're more on the track of an empath than probably psychic medium, which, if that is the case, you know, I don't think you've got to be beating yourself up on as to what did you open up for your kids. That's just usually passed down through genealogy. I mean, that's just through, it goes from generation to generation. You could sit down and talk with Rebecca Smuck or any other psychic medium, and they're just going to tell you that's just goes
well,
down
yeah,
through
we,
generation.
We've talked to Chip Coffey about this a little bit before, about psychic abilities being hereditary, and because Chip's grandmother, I believe it was believed to be a very gifted psychic, and Chip says absolutely. He thinks there's something hereditary about it. And in The Haunted Harlequin, you mentioned a little bit about your daughter picking up on things too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So she does. Ashton, she picks up on a lot. It's interesting because things follow her. I mean, they've followed me in my life. Things have followed me from New Orleans, and that was not a happy moment. But things have followed her from the Harlequin home, and sometimes she won't even tell me. Like, I was telling her a story about something the other day, and she was describing one of the spirits at the Harlequin that was in her room, and I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, I just need to have a live feed so I can say all the stuff that I come up with. Because I'm like, oh my God, this is nuts.
So this has been happening to you since you were just a child, Nikki. At any point, you know, maybe after you went through school and you know, whatever, and then you started to get into the real world, and I'm using air quotes, which you can't see in radio, but I'm using them anyway. You know, at any point, did you try to put it on the shelf? Did you say, that's behind me, I've got to play the real world now, I've got to get the 9-to-5 job, I've got to marry, I've got to have the family, the white picket fence, and the dog. Did you try to do that for a while?
Yeah. And then I moved into my house in Maryland, and that all changed. When there's an old woman spirit that starts humming when you wake up in the middle of the night, and she's like brushing your hair back, and I'm like, oh.
That just gave me chills.
My husband.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, imagine me sitting there. But, yeah, I woke up and here's the craziest part. So in that house, there was an upstairs, but then there was a finished off basement that you could access via a spiral staircase. And you could literally feel the difference between the upstairs and the downstairs. So the upstairs was this little old grandmother-like figure. Sweetheart, would bake cookies for you, just wonderful to be around. You could just tell by her energy. But as soon as you got to the middle of that spot, spiral staircase. It started to smell like sulfur.
Oh,
the air got super thick. It felt humid, and you just knew it was this. It just wasn't good. It just wasn't good.
Hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. So how long were you in that house for?
We were there from, 95 to 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Wow. 4 or 5 years too long,
yeah.
maybe?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing about it. So we were in the middle of moving to Texas because we were leaving Maryland and moving to Austin. And my husband went down to Texas or came down to Texas before I came down. So I was in that house by myself for about 6 months. And I went to work and was telling some folks about what was happening. And one of the ladies that worked with me brought in a blessed cross and holy water. And I thought, okay. I mean, I'm very spiritual, but I was like, yeah, I don't have any power like this. So I went home and took that blessed cross, and I took the holy water, and I said the Lord's Prayer, and I did the what I saw in The Exorcist, because, you know, I'm that good. I did, the air cross. I did the Lord's Prayer. I went through every room, and from that moment on, nothing else happened in that house while I was there.
Wow. That's impressive, too, in itself.
It is. And I'll tell you, that's probably the most empowering thing I've ever used is the Lord's Prayer, because I get more and more, it gets more and more intense as you go on and you say it.
Mm-hmm.
But it works every single time for me. It works. So
obviously you were you born and raised Christian then?
I was.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what they always say. They say whatever you use to cleanse and protect your house, it's got to be of the belief system that you were born and raised in,
right.
What you truly believe in. So you did the right thing, mm-hmm. obviously. And mm-hmm. Someone like you and myself or Brad, who were born and raised Christian as well, I personally wouldn't go out and do smudging or bring in something that the Native Americans would do, because that's not what I was raised on. I would do something along the lines mm-hmm. of what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, but I will tell you, in my house that I live in right now, we've seen shadow people in the house. All of us have, which just recently happened a couple weeks ago. My husband was freaked out because he saw one for the
Your husband
time.
Saw one because I've met your husband and he's quite skeptical.
Oh, he's super skeptical, but he saw one in the middle of the night. He got up. So I'll tell you the story. So I'm sleeping. I wake up every night between, I'd say, 3 and 3:15. I think everybody in the world does, but for some reason it just irritates me, and I do it. So I had woken up and, got myself situated, went back to sleep, and apparently my husband woke up not long after that. So he went to the restroom, came back, laid down in bed, and he said, I sleep on the left side, he sleeps on the right side, and I was sleeping on my left side with my back to him, and he could hear me kind of, not sobbing, but you know how you kind of make those little, like, muffled, and he could hear me crying. So he thought something was wrong. He's like, hey, what's wrong with you? And as he turned to look over at me, he saw a shadow figure standing over me, looking down on me.
Oh, good Lord.
And he screamed, Nick! Yeah. And I didn't move. And I'm a super light sleeper. I didn't move. He started shaking me. I still didn't wake up. So he got out of bed to run over because he was afraid it was, like, pulling my energy or taking my soul or something, because, movies. And he said as soon as he got out of bed and, he jumped up to run over and he turned to look and it was gone. And it freaked him out because the next morning he said, are you not going to talk about what happened last night? And I said, what happened? And he shared it with me and I about died. And then here's what's really interesting. My daughter had no idea. Ashton is my youngest. She's 17. She had no idea any of this happened. So my husband goes up to say goodbye to her before he leaves for work. And she hugged him, and she said, I saw a shadow behind him, and I thought it was just his shadow. And it didn't register to her that the sun wasn't really up yet. I mean, it was light, but the sun wasn't up yet. So there wouldn't be a shadow yet. And she said, it didn't hit me until he walked away, and the shadow was still standing there.
Oh, wow.
And she shut her door.
Enough.
So then, Nikki, is it safe to say, is he a non-skeptic now? Or is he, because I know people who could experience something like that and then give them half a day and they'll convince themselves again that it didn't really happen, or they're still skeptical.
Yes, he's still skeptical. Now, I'm like, really? He's been scratched? He's had a woman tell him to, like, that old woman in our house in Maryland, he woke up from a bad dream, and she said to him, "It's all right, honey." Out of nowhere, this boy. So I'm like, how can you be skeptical? And he's like, there's got to be an explanation. Yeah, there's an explanation.
So the Haunted Harlequin, let's get into the theater, your book that came out. Now, did you find the theater, or did it find you when you moved to Texas?
Yes.
Oh, my God, that's a great question. Here's how I found the theater. My Ashton was going to school at one of the local schools here close to our house, and her best friend, I think they were in first or second grade, invited her to go to a summer camp with her because they knew Ashton was a singer. So Ashton went to the Harlequin, and that is how we were introduced, because her little friend took us there. I had no idea it existed. I didn't even know Fort Sam existed until we went down. Wow. So it was... Because I'm not native Texan, I got here as fast as I could.
Let's go back a little bit and tell us a little bit, because it's got such a rich history. The Harlequin Theater, it's not just some little town theater. It was actually built as part of a military base.
It was. So Fort Sam Houston was established in 1870, and I think the first thing constructed was the quadrangle, which is where there's a clock tower, there's kind of like old building, it's almost like a town square, if you will. That was built in 1876 to 79. So it was completed in 1879. But then it started to grow. The base started to grow after that. It was there. Eisenhower was there for World War I, and then during World War II, the base exploded with growth. All these buildings started to be built. So many buildings were built that they stopped tracking it. They stopped tracking the construction. So I had to back in to the date that the building was built, because when I went to the library and the museum, they had records on the building, but the only thing they had was that the sprinkler system was installed in 1944. So they knew it was built about a year before
prior
that.
Prior to that.
So I'm like, oh, our government. Ugh. Anyway. So it was actually built as the NCO Club, and, you know, that's non-commissioned officers. So it had like two bars for them. Typically, NCO clubs have bars and a pool, little dance hall for, you know, little events, social events that they have and get together.
Basically, a social hall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And a few years later, and I don't know the exact year that the new NCO club was built, but when it was built, this building became an annex, if you will. And it was opened as a musical program for soldiers. So what they did was they allowed soldiers to come in and rent out musical instruments, and they had little soundproof modules where they could go in and play their instrument. And I honestly believe this was strictly so that they can blow off steam, because it's not an easy job being a soldier. Mm-hmm. So I think it was it was just served as that for a little while, and then in 1975 it was 1975 the Harlequin opened with its first drama. It was called Goodbye Charlie. So it's been running since then. Now, I will tell you that there were 3 years that the building did not have live production in the walls. And this was in 1979, January of 1979. There was a cold front that came through San Antonio. Now, you guys in Minnesota, Michigan, all in Wisconsin, you're all been like, really? But for us, it was cold enough that it was bursting pipes, especially when you have buildings that are, you know, were built in World War II in the late 70s.
Sure. Not insulated for that kind of weather.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not even a little bit. No, you saw how I handled England. So the pipes were bursting in buildings all over the place, and many of the buildings were just destroyed. Well, luckily for the Harlequin, it had the pipes started to freeze, and it triggered the sprinkler system. So the sprinkler system was going off, and water was dripping everywhere. So when Florence, the manager, came in the next day, there was water there, but it was still salvageable. So they were able to repair and restore a lot of the building, well, all of the building. And I think they opened up back up in 1982. So then live production started again. So it never really stopped producing plays, but there were 3 years where there were not productions within the walls.
Well, it's interesting to me because Tim and I were talking earlier about most theaters seeming to have some type of ghost story, and it just seems theaters in general kind of lend themselves to hauntings, just the emotions that get put out there and just the feeling that's in there. Were there any, and you might well not know because it was a government facility, but were there any reports of paranormal activity prior to this being turned into a theater?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't, but I can tell you in 1955, I did find something when I was researching. And let me tell you, Google is my friend. Everybody's friend. In October of 1955, there was a record of someone falling down the stairs. They fell down six stairs in that building, and they had to have their ankle fixed, something surgery or something done to their ankle. Why that was out there on as news, I have no idea, but it was. And what's interesting about that is that we have so many reports of people being pushed down those stairs. Even to today, we have people reporting that. So I don't know if that's paranormal or if he was just clumsy, but it there's a potential correlation there.
So reading over some of the haunts, Nikki, at the at the Harlequin, I mean, it ranges from
everything.
Yeah, the little girl who's looking for a playmate, right up to something, aggressive spirit or malicious presence. And so it really runs the gamut. Have you yourself witnessed all that seems to be listed with the theater?
Most of it,
yeah.
Yes. Most of it. There's a little. Go ahead. Were you gonna say?
No. So we don't want to take away from the book because we definitely want people to pick up your book and
absolutely
read it. It's a great read. But yeah, I mean, without giving away everything, how often do you hit activity there while you're there working?
Oh my gosh! You know, I always say this because with any paranormal activity, they're not really a circus act. They do what they want to do. It's like your kids. They do what they want to do when they want to do it, and you know, I can walk in there and for a month straight, we can be experiencing things every single day. And then you can walk in and not hear anything for 3 weeks. And I was doing the set for, last night. I was just there last night for rehearsal. Everybody else was standing outside. I didn't know I was in the building alone, or I would not have been. And I just remember this, but everybody was standing outside the door waiting for some of the other cast to get there for the rehearsal. And I was inside, sitting my stuff down and moving tables around. And I heard someone moving around in the kitchen. All the lights were off. It's not really a kitchen anymore. It's more of a storage area, but I could hear things being moved around. And I was like, what the hell are they doing in the kitchen? Especially with the lights off. And I went to the, I looked out into the lobby and I noticed they were standing outside and nobody was in there. And I was like, oh, just leave me alone. Just leave me alone.
Well, the one entity there, and as I said, we don't want to give away a lot of the stories from the book because it's a great read. The one thing I have to ask you about is the creature.
Yes. He is, well, here's the thing about the creature. So I've been terrified of this thing for years and years and years. He is across, I've never seen him with my naked eye. Mm-hmm. I saw him in a picture on a cell phone.
Yeah, tell us that story. Give us a little teaser from the book on that, because that's one of my favorite stories in the book. I'm sure it wasn't for you at the time it happened. But
no.
take us back to that one.
Okay. There's a couple things I'll tell you about. So Robert and I were in the light booth. Robert Olivas is one of the managers at the Harlequin. Sean Chose and Robert Olivas manage it. And Robert and I were in the light booth. He was teaching me lights several years ago. And we could hear things moving around up in the grid. And the grid is the area over the dining area, over the stage, where air conditioning is and lights and all the things that's not pretty. So in the light booth, there is a like a ladder and a little square hole in the ceiling where you can get, you have access to the grid if you need to get up there for any reason. And we kept hearing things up there. And I took my phone. Now, this was my old phone, which I wish I could find. Anyway, I took my phone and I took two pictures. The second picture had something like crouched down, looking down at us.
Oh.
And it was the creepiest thing. And it's got an, I want to say like a, it is definitely a cross between an alien and an animal because people have heard it growl at them. It's got like almond-shaped eyes. It's kind of a grayish beige. There's a picture in the book that it's not a picture of the of what I saw. It's the closest thing I've found to what it is. And the only reason I found this picture is because I was at dinner with one of my dear friends, Johnny, who also has experienced things at the theater, and he was sharing some things with me, and he said he was telling me about this creature. And I was like, wait a second, because I had no idea he had seen it too. And he pulled up this picture on his phone to show me from a movie that he had watched what the closest thing he had seen that looks like it. It's called Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, and I can't remember what year the movie came out, but I think Katie Holmes is in it. Anyway, so he shows me this picture, and I was like, oh my God, that's it. That's it. So that picture is actually in the book so that people have an idea of what we saw, but somebody had seen this in the 70s, before any of us even thought about the Harlequin, had seen this same creature. But I did have a conversation, the lady that puts on the stage, Paracon, Emma J. Dixon, she was telling me, I was telling her about this creature, and she said, I don't think you need to be afraid of it. And I was like, what are you talking about, afraid of it? It's growling at me.
Yes, I have to be afraid of it.
Right? Exactly. And she said, no, I think it's an elemental. And she said, if you think about it, the way they're going to interact with you is the way an animal would. They are going to growl at you because they don't know you. They're afraid of you. And until you prove yourself trustworthy, it's going to continue to growl at you. So now all of a sudden, I have a whole new outlook on this thing going, oh my God, I'm being mean to a dog. And
yeah, I'm sorry, but screw that. I would be running.
Yeah, I'm not giving this one treats like a dog by any means. So, Nikki, I'm actually, while you were talking about that, I actually hurried up, you know, we were just praising Google. I Googled Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Once I punched it in, I remembered watching this movie, but I found a picture of that very creature. And you're saying that you believe that it's that identical? So what I'm looking at right now is what you feel you guys saw in the theater that night?
It's pretty damn close.
Oh,
it's the closest thing
goodness.
I've ever seen.
That is downright, that's downright terrifying.
Yeah.
Right? Right? And what's funny is when I took off out of the light booth, so I took this picture, I saw the picture, I took off out of the light booth, and Robert's yelling at me, telling me to come back, because he knew we heard something, but he had no idea what we heard, so he was cussing me left and right, because I didn't go back in. I finally went back in, and I showed him, and he was like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why do you leave me alone?
So somewhere out there on an old phone is this photo, right? It's just like lost out there right now in the ether?
It's on a red Sprint phone. But let me tell you something. I want to find the phone, but I'd love to find it for this particular creature.
Right.
The reason I want to find the phone is because there's a picture of my grandma on it who passed away in 2006, and that was the last picture I've had of her. And that's why I want the phone. This other thing is a bonus. The phone, I want it for my grandma.
Absolutely. Nikki, I'll tell you what, thank you so much again for taking time to be with us all the way from Texas, coming inside the creaking door, and for the listeners, just touching on the amount of haunts and amazing stories that come out of the haunted Harlequin. Of course, you can find the main website, thehauntedharlequin.com, and any other places, Nikki, where they can find your work and information to follow along with your travels?
I have a Facebook account, mm-hmm. Nikki Folsom Author, and just everything's on my website.
All right.
When do we expect the next book?
I'm working on it right now. I'm hoping for it to come out next year. I want it to be out before I get to the Michigan Paracon next year.
All right. That's what we like to hear. Well, Nikki, yes. Stay warm in Texas this coming winter. I'm sure it gets downright chilly there. And tell the spirits at the Harlequin that we say hello from Michigan, and we hope to get down there to see them because this place sounds absolutely amazing. The book is wonderful. Check it out at thehauntedharlequin.com. Nikki Folsom is the author. Nikki, thank you so much much for coming on Inside the Creaking Door.
Thank you all so much for having me, and come on down.
Yes, we're packing right now. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more on the way from Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com. Do you love your horror films, comic books, and TV shows served up with a side of what the f***? Then we have the place for you.
Slackjaw Punks!
Yeah, SlackjawPunks.com. We dare you to check them out. A podcast that focuses on all the new horror films, comic books, and TV shows, and interviews with the authors and directors, but covered only the way the guys from
Slackjaw Punks
can do it. Plus, you can enjoy written commentary on all of the new stuff, too, from a whole slew of staff writers. So stop wasting time and check it out.
Slackjaw Punks!
SlackjawPunks.com. Serving it up with a side of what the f***. And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you. And once again, want to thank author Nikki Folsom for coming on in. Brad, I think if we would have given another 30 minutes to Nikki, she could have just kept going. She's got so much history and knowledge of that place.
Absolutely. And I can't wait for her next book to come out. And then we'll obviously bring her back in.
Yeah.
She is so fluent in paranormal energies, and just, you know, it's amazing to sit one-on-one and talk with her.
Yeah,
really a neat lady.
You can tell it comes very natural for her.
It does.
And so if you ever get a chance to see Nikki, if she's at a speaking engagement near you, we highly recommend going to see her and picking up her book, The Haunted Harlequin, Ghostly Experiences Behind the Scenes. All right, it is that time now of the show where we like to do a segment we call Mailbag, where we invite our listeners to reach out to us through our Facebook page. You can find us, Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. We're the only one on there, and you can send it to us privately or send it to us on the main wall, and we'll find it either way. I thought this one would be interesting to do tonight, Brad, because we are heading into the holidays, and we're in discussions right now, and I know our producers are working out a show to deal with angels and miracles, kind of the whole holiday. We haven't really touched on that yet.
No, we haven't.
Since we've been doing the Creaking Door, we've done a lot of haunted holidays and Krampus. We thought we'd kind of go a little bit easier this year.
We even had Who Hung Santa Claus.
Yes, that's right.
The lynching of Santa Claus. that was great.
That was a great one, too. So we thought this year, yeah, we would kind of approach the whole the Christmas miracles, the angels, mm-hmm. and everything like that. So this one was really nice from a younger listener. His name is Danny, 15 years old, from Colorado Springs. Hello, Tim and Brad. I love Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Really enjoy listening to you guys. Quick question, easy answer, I hope. Do you believe in guardian angels? Thank you. Danny, we need a little more to go on that.
I don't know about a quick or easy answer on that.
Definitely a quick question. Don't know about an easy answer.
Guardian angels, per se. What do you think, Tim?
Well, you know, one thing that I have definitely... A lot has evolved with my approach to the afterlife in our 20-plus years of being really
involved
into this.
Yeah.
And then getting to know people like... Christy Robinette and Tim Shaw and Chip Coffey, the type of people who we've been able to actually just sit down with and talk, and really the psychic mediums. And, you know, I truly believe that what they call spirit guides and what the church has dubbed as guardian angels are truly the same thing. I believe there's someone there. I don't know if it's family. I don't know what or who it is. But I truly believe there is an energy of some sort that is with each and every one of us. I wish I had a deeper answer. I don't. How could I? But I do believe that what some refer to as the spirit guide is the same as what some refer to as the guardian angel.
Mm-hmm. I guess where I vary from that is I don't want to rain on any parade. I don't believe that there's a specific entity that is assigned to you to keep you safe.
Right.
To stop you from doing dumb things. Because if that's the case, then mine's doing a piss poor job. But
you're still alive, aren't you?
There is that. I don't think there is one entity out there that is assigned to follow each individual person around. As far as a guardian angel goes by that, which I guess is probably more of the biblical definition on
sure.
it. I do think there are energies out there that people can tap into
yeah.
that can have contact with.
Yep.
As you've mentioned earlier, we've talked to way too many people and have way too many friends in the field that have had very in-depth, very personal connections
you bet.
With different energies. So,
and that's why I'm very much looking forward to doing a holiday show based
yeah.
on that
yeah.
subject matter, because we haven't gone there yet.
There's so many great stories out there, and I've read so many books on similar topics to this. I can't mm-hmm. say I've really delved into the topic of guardian angels as something to concentrate on. But
right.
yeah, I don't believe the way a lot of people do that. It is one specific individual energy that is assigned to you. I think it's more of just this different psychic energy that people can tap into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. I remember, for whatever reason, the one book from Christy Robinette, Forevermore, the one on Edgar
Allan
Poe.
Sure, I read that one,
yeah.
too.
And in there, she very openly describes what she believes is that there's one that is assigned to us for our lifetime. They are there the whole time, but we don't just have one. I believe she said there's up to three. One is with us the entire time, and then the other two will, like, rotate or come and go or whatever. So I just thought it was I love to get the different insight on what, you know, those who have that ability, what they feel and believe.
And I'm not psychic sensitive any. I don't pretend to be. I don't put that out there. This is my personal opinion
sure.
on the matter.
Yeah, exactly. So. And Danny, that was a very deep question.
Whether it was meant to be or not.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think it's safe to say Brad and I both believe that there's definitely something there. We just don't have the answer. And that's kind of why we love this field so much, because there is no answer. And it's intriguing. And it just keeps us thinking
it's
all the time.
Always part of the journey.
Yep, absolutely. So, Danny from Colorado Springs, thank you so much for the mailbag. And remember, anyone can send us a mailbag question at any time. Just go to our Facebook page and fire it off there.
Or hit us up on the Twitter.
We do that tweeting thing, absolutely. So you can always reach out to us. We love to hear from you. You can share a story. You can ask a question. And we'd love to share it with you and all of our listeners on the show. Well, I think that's going to do it, Brad. Another one is come and gone.
Yeah. Thanks again to Nikki Folsom.
You bet.
Coming on in
and doing a great interview again. Check out her book, The Haunted Harlequin, Ghostly Experiences Behind the Scenes. So on behalf of Brad Blair and myself, Tim Ellis, thank you for coming on Inside the Creaking Door. And we are powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
The Creaking Door.